It's my pleasure to introduce Cyrano Franky from Rome One, pure topical multiplier, double.
Okay. So, let me explain these sort of weird words. So we choose a volume form on a six-dimensional complex vector space. And we use it to define a symplectic form on the third wedge product of C6. So given alpha beta, we take the wedge product and we compute the volume. Okay, so this is a symplectic form. Skew symmetric, non-degenerate. And so then it makes sense to speak of a Lagrangian subspace of wedge 3 of C6. And of course, if we rescale the volume form, it's always a Lagrangian. So it makes sense to define consider the set of Lagrangian subspaces. So that means that this symplectic form, I just denote it. Okay, let's denote it that way. So Lagrangian means that the restriction to A is identically zero, and A has the maximum possible dimension of a subspace with this property. That is, twice the dimension of A has to be equal to this dimension, and this dimension is 20. Okay, so this is A is a 10-dimensional subspace of wedge 3 of C6 with the property that when you restrict the symplectic form to A, you get something identically zero. Okay, and now the projective group PGL6 acts on this symplectic Grassmannian. Okay, so GL6 acts on C6, and so we get an action of GL6 on this symplectic Grassmannian if we consider dilations act trivially. So we get the PGL6 acts on this object. So I write it often. So, and we want to study the GIT quotient. Okay. So, okay. So here one should specify a PGL6 linearized ample Einbahnung on this symplectic Grassmannian, but the Picard group of the symplectic Grassmannian is a copy of Z, so there's no ambiguity, and a generator, Plucker generator of the Picard group is already linearized, so there's no question about linearization. Okay. And so the first thing should be to say why could one be interested in this quotient, in particular what is the connection with the theme of the workshop. Okay. So I want to give some motivation, And then I'll say what are the results that one can obtain. Okay. So maybe I'll... okay. So I'll start here. So we want to, given one of these Lagrangians, first thing I want to associate a sextic hypersurface in P5. Well, usually. So how do I define this YA? Okay. So first notation. Given a vector in C6, I want to consider the elements of wedge 3 of C6, which are such that when we multiply them by V, we get 0, which are killed by V. Okay? So FV or in other words, those alpha which can be written as V wedge, an element of wedge 2. Okay? And this YA that I was announcing consists of those points in P5 such that FV, okay, intersected A is not what you not what you expect generically. Okay, so what do we expect of this intersection? FV is a 10-dimensional vector space. So if you want to think of it, you can choose an isomorphism with wedge 2 of C5, and this is 10 dimensional. Okay. So these are both 10-dimensional subspaces of a 20-dimensional vector space, so if they are randomly chosen, they would be transverse. So we impose the condition that the intersection is not zero, so that they're not transverse. Okay? So you expect this to be a hypersurface, and in fact, you can compute easily these FV fit into a vector bundle, so a vector bundle whose first Chern class is O of minus 6, so you expect this to be a sextic hypersurface. So this is either a sextic hypersurface, which we call an EPW sextic, and the term EPW sextic, this were given as examples of, well, in a paper of Eisenbart Pascal Walter. That's why. Or it could be or all of P5, sort of, this is a degenerate case. It does happen, but for example, if A itself is one of these F, if A is FW, you see immediately that, so it can happen in some cases. Now, what is, so these are very special sextic hypersurfaces in P5. And what is special about this assuming it's a hypersurface, but well, it comes with a double cover. So this is what in the title, this is a double, of course, EPW sextic. And So what happens if A is generic? If it's generic, this is what happens. Well, we can say first this okay, the main point is what, anyway, F is unramified away from, just to give you an idea of what, of the singular set of YA, and this is a surface of degree, degree is not important, but just to give you an idea that it's a very special kind of sextet. But the main thing is that and XA is a hyperkähler manifold. Well, fourfold, of course. Deformation equivalent to a Hilbert square of a K-tree. I'll recall in a second what this means for some, okay? And so then there's an ample divisor on XA, which is given by, well, the notation is not perfect, but, and ample, and if we look at the four-tuple intersection, we get 12, okay? Of course, it's twice the degree of YA. But I'm observing this because 1 should notice that if X is the deformation, deformation of the Hilbert square of a case 3, and we have a 2 cohomology class, then the fourth power is equal to, when you integrate it, you get a multiple of 12. Okay, so this 12 is the minimum positive four-tuple power that you can get on a deformation of the Hilbert square for K3. Okay. And No. Any two cohomology class. It's just a topological fact. It's just, for those who know it, it's just the properties of the Bovil-Bogomolov quadratic form and the Fujiki constant for this. It's topological. Okay, so so now maybe I'll spend a minute saying something about hyperkählers, so at least it justifies the talk. Integral, yes, integral. I don't know. There is a Z, but maybe it's not visible. Integral class, of course. Pardon? Ah, yes. Okay, yes. Yes. Okay. So, let's say, cool. A compact Kähler X is hyperkähler. It's sort of stretching the language, but for us it's like that. If it's simply connected and H20 of X is spanned by the class of a symplectic holomorphic two form. So if the dimension is 2, this is simply, then you get K3 surfaces. The fact is that hyperkähler's are really in many for many reasons they are the higher dimensional analogs of K3s. Slogan is hyperkähler's are okay, and so what this family of double EPW sec 6 that you get in this way are really analogous. If you want to think of K3s, they're really analogous to K3s, which are double covers of P2. Okay, so family of smooth double sec 6 is really analogous to K3s, which are double covers. So these are double covers of P2 branched along a sec stick, and there is a, in a deep way, they are analogous. Okay. So, yes. So let me give you one explicit example, so it's a little bit less. So we start with a K3 of genus 6, generic one. So I want it to be an intersection of quadrics. So the hyperplane sections are canonical curves of genus 6. And since it's generic, it's an intersection of quadrics. And we want to consider so probably we want it not to, we want F not to contain lines also, otherwise this F that I'm going to define will not be irregular. And we want to consider, the system of quadrics containing S. So that has dimension 5, it's a P5, and we want to take the dual, and we want to define a map which will be regular if S is cut by quadrics and S contains no lines. And the map is the following. Given this subscheme of length 2, it spans a well-defined line in P6, and we want to consider all quadrics containing that. So this is S. We have this is Z. Okay, it spans a line. Now, if we consider the quadrics containing S, they already contain 2 points of this line, so imposing that it contains the whole line is one more condition. Okay, so that means that the set of lines of quadrics containing the span of Z has codimension 1, unless it's the whole set of quadrics if S contains the line. So, if it's generic, it's not the norm. Okay. Okay. So we have this map, and now what happens is that F. I shouldn't have called it F. It's a bad. It's G. I'm sorry. G. Well, G. There's no variable G. So, okay. So G is of degree 2 onto an EPW set. I won't tell you what is the A. Actually, a particular EPW sextic, the fact is that there will be, why a particular EPW sextic, how one can see directly that it's a particular EPW sextic. Well, there will be among inside this Hilbert square of S, there will be a plane, and that plane will be contracted by this map. This map G is not finite. It will contract a plane, and in fact, the double cover of this special EPW sextic will be can be obtained by contracting this plane in the Hilbert square. Okay. And no, good question, but no, it comes. So a generic K3 of genus 6 you can obtain starting. So you can start from a final threefold in P6 of index 2, that will be simply, well, and so this final threefold of index 2, then you intersect it with a quadric. So you can obtain this F in P6 by, I repeat it, by taking a final threefold of index 2 and intersecting it with a quadric. Now the final threefold of index 2 will, if you look at the lines contained in the final threefold, that is a P2 that was shown by Yuzkowski a long time ago. And so each of these lines parameterized by P2 gives you a subsky, an element of this Hilbert square, because each line intersects the quadric in two points, which will be contained in S. And that is the plane that it gets contracted. Okay. Anyway, is I'm saying this because I want to stress that the locus of this particular EPW sextic is a codimension 1 subset that you get in this way, is the codimension 1 subset of our symplectic Grassmannian. The generic EPW sextic will not be in this way and of this form, and the generic double EPW sextic will not be isomorphic or even birational to the Hilbert square of a K3. Okay. So now I can. So at this point, we are interested in this moduli space because it is a compactification of the moduli space of smooth EPW sextic. Okay, so this is Okay. Okay. So now, what do? We start doing the GIT analysis. So we want to determine which points in the symplectic Riemannian are stable or semi-stable, and so on. Okay. So Hilbert Mumford, they tell us that one of these Lagrangians. It's 20. So it's really, so if you want to look, if you want to talk about K3 surfaces, it's really analogous to the modular space of double covers of P2. But if you want to look at something parameterizing, so the real very strict analog, if you want, is the modular space of cubic fourfolds. So other. Moduli space. So these, if you want to, if you consider cubic fourfold, you look at the variety parameterizing lines. If the cubic fourfold is smooth, that is again a hyperkähler fourfold deformation equivalent to the Hilbert square of K3. What is changing there is the numerical properties of the polarization. If you look at the family of lines on a cubic fourfold, it has a Plucker ample line bundle, and that, if you take the fourth power, it's not 12, but I'd have to think of it. It's like 3 times 6 squared, I think. It's 3 times 36. So it's 108. Okay, so it's like considering. So if you the analogy between this moduli space and the moduli space of cubic fourfolds, it's like comparing moduli of K3s of degree 2 and moduli of K3s of degree 6 or something. Well, actually, yeah. Okay. And so this has dimension 20. Okay. So the GRT analysis. So if one of these Lagrangians is not semi-stable, if and only if there exists a one parameter subgroup lambda such that my convention is the opposite of the usual one, but it's the usually one puts less or equal. And so what this means, for those who are not familiar with this, this means that the limit as t goes to 0 of lambda t omega exists for a generator of wedge 10 of A. So A has dimension 10, so you embedded via Plucker, considering wedge 10 of A, you take a generator. Let's put it in SL6. SL6x on that, and if this exists, then it is not stable. So the not stable corresponds to bigger or equal than zero, not semi-stable corresponds to strictly bigger than zero. Anyway, so the fact is that given a specific one parameter subgroup, it's rather straightforward to write what is this condition. I mean, it is straightforward. But you have to test all possible one-parameter subgroups in theory. Okay. By Noetherianity, anyway, by Emmy-Noether, in the end, it's clear a posteriori that you'll only have to test a finite set of one-parameter subgroups, but it's not clear how to know a priori which ones you want to test. Okay? But there is a simple observation, which maybe is already in the literature, I don't know, couldn't find it, that gives you an algorithm to establish a priori that it suffices to test up to conjugacy, a finite set of one-parameter subgroups. So I'll call it sort of a bit pompous name, but at least it's a name, so I can refer to it. So you can apply this whenever you have a linear reductive group acting on a Grassmannian or product of Grassmannians. Okay. So what this produces explicit. This is finite set of what I call ordering. I don't know. I had to invent a name so I could write it. So such that the following holds. Then Hilbert-Mumford numerical function is bigger or equals to zero, such that given a Lagrangian subspace, mu of a lambda is bigger or equal to zero for some one-parameter subgroup lambda, if and only if there exists G in SL6 and lambda I, and an ordering lambda I, such that mu of GA lambda I is b equal than 0. So in other words, it's what I said. You can compute a finite set of one-parameter subgroups such that up to conjugacy, you only have to test the Hilbert-Mumford criterion for those one-parameter subgroups. The idea is very simple. I'll just give you the recipe. Well, last time I said this, it was resulted to be incomprehensible. So the ordering one-parameter subgroups, how do you find them? So you choose a basis of C6. So I want to consider the one-parameter subgroup will be diagonalized with respect to this basis. So the sum of the exponents is zero because it's in SL6, and So in other, I fix a maximal choice, I look at one primary subgroups in that maximal choice, then So I look at these one primary subgroups. And each such one primary subgroup acts on wedge 3 of C6, and this action decomposes as, as a sum of one-dimensional irreducible representations, right? So we'll have the various, the ordering one-primer subgroups are those obtained by imposing that there are, say to speak, sort of vaguely speaking, there are as many as possible equalities between the. So each of these gives me a character, or exponent. So here it acts as T. Oh, I shouldn't write here. Here the action is simply T to the RI plus RJ plus RK. So we have these various exponents, and it will be an ordering one-parameter subgroup if there are as many equalities as it's possible, a priori, among these exponents. So what am I saying? You don't need to test a one-parameter subgroup such that all the exponents are pairwise distinct. Okay? And you only need to test one-parameter subgroups in which there are at least four equalities. Okay? This 4 is because the cone, is in a 5-dimensional. These 4 equalities among the exponents so I'm sort of vague because my time is running out. Now, so then what one does is one feeds the computer the data needed to compute these things, because that's a very simple thing for a computer. And so, and so one gets a list of ordering subgroups. So we have, I'll just write, just so that it's not, you shouldn't copy this. So this means there's a 5 followed by 5 minus 1, and so on. And you end up with, I'll write it in order of complexity. So now you have this finite list of one-primer subgroups for each of these. You say, well, what does it mean that a Lagrangian has numerical Hilbert-Mumford function bigger or equal to 0, say, for this one? It's some flag condition on A. And then, I did this by hand, probably a better way. Anyway, and so what happens is that only the simplest one-parameter subgroups contribute effectively. So what I mean is, if you look at what does it mean for this complicated one-parameter subgroup to that mu of A lambda is bigger or equal than 0, well, if mu of A lambda is bigger or equal than 0 for this lambda, then it's going to be already bigger or equal than 0 for the first few, for the simplest ones. And so, in the end, what you get is that you get that the locus of non-stable points you describe explicitly as the union of 12 reducible locally closed sets defined by flag conditions. Okay. Anyway, there's no need to. There's no way I could sort of. Okay. Ah, what's the last one? Ah. Okay. Then this always raises questions because there's an X. Okay. So these are 12 irreducible, locally closed, defined by flag conditions on A. So just to give you a taste of what kind of conditions that rather, well, at least to motivate what I'll say next. Examples. Okay, so this is A such that exist B in P5 with a property that the dimension of A intersects with FV is at least 5. Okay? And things like that. Just mention this. So linear algebra conditions. These are those A such that they exist to subspaces of dimension 3 of C6 such that they intersect in dimension 2 and so these are sort of linear algebra conditions on A. Okay. And then after that, if you continue with GAT, you can describe the what you get in the model A space, what is represented by semi-stable, non-stable points. I'll make it short. GAT also gives that if you delete the locus of stable points, it will be the union of, well, some of those get identified, okay? So will be the union of 8 components, each has a certain dimension, and so on. Okay. But now, okay, so this is very nice, but if you look at those conditions, we want some relation between stability or semi-stability and geometry. So, okay, and so see, those conditions, it's not clear what does it mean geometrically for the XA having these properties. Okay, and so we want to, so my point of view is to establish some dictionary between stability or semi-stability and properties of the period map. Okay, so we have a period map rational from this to Bailey-Boyle compactification of so there's a suitable bounded semitic domain of type 4. There's an arithmetic group acting. We take the quotient and then we take the Bailey-Boyle compactification. Anyway, so this is the period map, and if XA is smooth, then okay, it follows from this, but I'm saying it will be stable. Then A is stable, and the period point will be the Hodge structure on H, the primitive H2 of XA. So it's a really period map. But we want to know what is the behavior of the period map on this compactification. So here, this is the analogy one should think of, is really with periods, as I said before, of cubic fourfolds. And so, sort of, in some way, I'm guided by what was done by Voisin, Ladza, and Lo Yenga, really. So, I mean, separately. The main names of these. So, really, okay. And so the question. So if I make myself a question, I can go over the 20 minutes, I guess. Okay, but I'll try not to. The question is relation between semi-stability of A and T of A, so goes to the boundary or goes to the interior, or P is not regular at A. What is the relation with semi-stability? Okay, and so in order to give you an idea of that, unfortunately I have to introduce a couple of other geometric objects. Okay, but I would like to. Otherwise, so in order to give some answers to this question, I want to consider those Lagrangian subspaces which contain a decomposable element of wedge 3. Okay, so this is codimension 1, irreducible. Okay. Outside of sigma, XA, A is stable. And XA is maybe not necessarily smooth, but it's as good as smooth. For example, I had before, the contraction of the Hilbert square of a K3 of genus 6 at a plane, it's not really smooth, but it's as good as smooth. And XA smooth or almost smooth. So it's as good as it could be. The period map, in particular, P of A, is in the interior of the Bailey-Boyle compactification. Everything is okay. Okay, now let's take an A in sigma, okay? And this W, this decomposable. Okay, and we can define a Sachse curve in the projectivization of W as follows. So it's a construction similar to the definition of EPW Sachse. So first of all, notice that this decomposable is if you multiply it by any element of W, you get zero, and it belongs to A. So this decomposable belongs, if you take any non-zero vector in W, this decomposable belongs to F of that vector, V, and it also belongs to A. So that means that the projectivization of W is in YA, okay? And so it makes sense to consider those V in W such that the dimension of FV and A at that point is at least 2. Mark. Okay. Let So this is already at least 1, so we impose that it's at least 2. And now this is one of two cases, either a Sachse curve in P of W, or all of P of W, sort of the degenerate case. Okay, and now we have a here. So first I'll make hypothesis one. We take a Lagrangian, okay? Let's suppose that for every W as above, so if A is not in sigma, there's no W, there's nothing to test. CWA is a Sachse, it's not all of Sachse, and the period map for Sachse is regular at that point. Okay, so we can consider all Sachse in P of W. We have so this is the period map for K3s of degree 2. So given a Sachse, we take the double cover, okay, and we have if the Sachse is smooth, we have a K3. Okay. And the pyramid map is regular at W. So if this is true for every W such that wedge cube of W is in A, then A is semi-stable. Okay. And And then let's make another hypothesis. Hypothesis two is that hypothesis one holds. and the orbit of A, so by thesis one it's semi-stable, so the orbit of A is closed in the semi-stable locus. So these are these corresponding, okay? And thesis two is that P is regular at this point, at the point in the moduli space corresponding to this A, and the P of A is in the interior of the period space if and only if CWA has simple singularities. And so I'll close in a minute because so let's definition. Let's call M ADE the set of points represented by Lagrangians which satisfy hypothesis 2 and this further condition is set of A such that A satisfies hypothesis 2 and this condition star and stuff. Okay. So now one other result relating the period map and stability is the following result, which is the analog of results of Lazza on cubic fourfolds. That locus is contained in the stable locus. So this is analog of Lazza on cubic fourfolds. Okay, so I think I have to stop.